Hello, welcome to the podcast of the Journal of Applied Ecology, where we put applied ecology into practice. My name is Mark Cadott, senior editor of the journal. The journal will use this format to bring you conversations with the authors of some of our exciting new papers. Here I'll ask the authors questions about their recent work and get them to talk about the management relevance of their research.
For this month's podcast, I'm speaking with Richard Shine, professor in the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Sydney, and currently holding a Federation Fellowship from the Australian Research Council. He is the senior author of a recently published paper in the Journal of Applied Ecology, authored with Stephanie O'Donnell and Jonathan Webb, titled "Conditioned Taste Aversion Enhances the Survival of Endangered Predator Imperiled by a Toxic Invader," which is about efforts to induce a behavioral modification of Australia's endangered northern quoll in order to ensure its survival under threat from cane toad invasions. All right, Rick, I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the quoll in general, about this animal, and specifically why it's currently endangered.
Quolls are marsupials. The one that we have been working on is about the size of a domestic cat, although they do come various species, range a bit in size. They're ferocious little carnivores. They probably have the ecological niche that cats have in some other parts of the world. They're pretty spectacular little creatures, spotted with long fluffy tails. One of the most spectacular things about our guys is that the males only live for a year. They die after the mating season, whereas females can live for a few years. And like many of the predators in Australian ecosystems, they've been put under considerable pressure by the invasion of cane toads. These South American giant frogs are very, very toxic. Quolls eat frogs, native frogs, in the same way they eat lizards and bugs and so on. And so when they see their first cane toad, they jump on it thinking they've just found a lovely edible frog, but the toxins of the toad rapidly kill the quoll.
The readers of the Journal of Applied Ecology will be particularly interested in this research. And before we get into the implications of this research, I was wondering if you can just summarize the research in this paper and what your general findings were.
Yeah, the biggest problem we have with the cane toad invasion of Australia is the death of large predators, some of the large lizards, snakes, crocodiles, and marsupials like the quoll. And the way that people have always tried to do something about that kind of a problem with an invasive species is just to get rid of all the invaders, to somehow eliminate them from the system. But that's incredibly hard to do. And in the case of cane toads, it may be, for example, that all you need is one or two toads in an area for most of the local predators to find at least one, and one toad is all you have to find to be fatal, because the first toad that a predator attacks will probably kill it. So John O'Webb, one of my co-authors, had the idea that we could use taste aversion, that we could essentially educate the predators that toads were a really bad idea, that they should just leave them alone instead of attacking them. And it sounds a bit silly, but in fact, that's the mechanism by which most of the predator species that are not affected by cane toads manage to survive. Most of the predators are small. They attack small toads that don't have too much poison. The predator gets sick but doesn't die, and after that it leaves toads alone. The big problem we have is these large predators like quolls that attack very large toads that contain a vast amount of poison. So what we really wanted to do was see if we could experimentally change the behavior of these large predators in the same way that a simple learning experience works without human intervention for the small predators.
And in your research, you introduced laced toads to captive individual quolls. And can you tell us exactly what their responses were to these laced toads?
Yeah, we took advantage of a captive breeding program. The Territory Wildlife Park, which is a small zoo up near Darwin, had been raising quolls for some time and releasing them into the wild in response to the incredible decline in the number of quolls across the Australian landscape. And so Stephanie was able to get access to these animals that were being reared, and we gave them small dead toads to which we'd added a small amount of a chemical called thiobendazole. It's a common agricultural chemical, and it makes you desperately ill. And so the idea was that the quolls could associate the taste of and the sight of toads with being sick after the meal. But after that one experience with one that we had laced with nausea-inducing chemical, quolls suddenly had a very different response. They'd take one look at the toad, they'd kind of look sideways, look backwards, wander over, sniff it a couple of times, and then just walk away.
And for the listeners of this podcast, people can find a great little video that you guys put out with a quoll sniffing and then basically turning its nose away from a toad. And was that one of the individuals that was used in this study and released?
Yes, that was one of the kids that was raised up and taught that toads were a very bad idea.
And so the quolls that were conditioned with these toads were eventually released, as were a group of, I guess, toad-naive quolls. And some died after release. And can you tell us a little bit about what the findings were with respect to survivorship for the quolls, the naive and the trained?
Yes, we took 62 quolls, and we split the litters. Half of the individuals were trained to leave toads alone. The other half were not trained in that way. And then they were all released with radio collars, and we monitored them after they had been put back into areas in the general area of Darwin and Kakadu and sort of tropical savanna areas where quolls were quite common a decade ago but have essentially disappeared since the toad invasion. Many of the naive quolls died almost immediately. I mean, it was pretty tragic. These were these, you know, beautiful little animals, and people had been putting all this effort into raising them up for 6 or 8 months. And within an hour or two of being put back into the field, they would find a toad, attack it, and lie there dead. However, the quolls that we had trained to avoid toads did much better. Survival rates were substantially higher. It was something like a 30% increase in survival rates. So it's really encouraging. I guess on a personal level, one of the biggest thrills I've had for a long time was late last year, several months after we'd done this work. I was actually out sampling toads for another project, and we went to a site where there was some large lights on, and there were lots of bugs around and lots of toads feeding on the bugs. And there was one of our quolls that we'd released several months ago, happily hopping around, grabbing bugs and just kicking cane toads out of the way. So it's clear that some of these quolls, at least, have survived very long term to the point that they've been able to breed.
Yeah, this is a really great story with a critically endangered species. And it does seem like a very intensive investment and time requirement. What would be the long-term strategies for maintaining these toad aversions in quoll populations?
Yeah, the current study really is just a proof of concept. It shows that it can work. To implement it on a landscape scale, we obviously can't afford to put the amount of time into training quolls individually and so forth. There's a couple of issues. One is that we wouldn't need to train every quoll in northern Australia. All we really need is to create pockets of resistance that will then provide areas from which quolls can recolonise the landscape after toads move through. That makes it a little bit easier. But we also need a way to deploy the aversion-inducing chemical in some sort of a toad bait. And we're currently playing with sausages of various descriptions. We've shown that quolls will quite happily eat sausages of toad flesh in the wild. And indeed, we can very easily induce quolls not to eat sausages. The challenge is to induce quolls not to eat toads after they've been exposed to the sausage. So that work's still very much underway, but I'm hopeful that we can come up with a method that can be deployed at the landscape scale that can do something about building up the numbers of this critically endangered animal.
And are there examples of other medium or large-sized predators in Australia that are similarly under threat from cane toads and that this research could potentially inform possible conservation strategies?
The primary ecological impact of cane toads is visited on the very large-bodied predators, and they're a very diverse bunch of animals. Freshwater crocodiles in some areas, but not others. The most spectacular victims are probably the very large lizards, the varanids or goannas. These guys get to 2 to 3 meters in length. They're huge lizards, very, very common in tropical Australia, and we get something like 90 to 95% mortality within 12 months after toad invasion. We've currently got a student, Chris Spraggan, who's wandering around the wilds of northwestern Australia, hoping to try to induce toad aversion in goannas in the same way that Stephanie was able to do so with quolls. So, yes, I'm optimistic. The difficulty, of course, is that we've got a fair spread of different kinds of species here. The methods that will work for a marsupial may not work too well for a lizard. We're going to have to tweak the system a bit, I think, to get it to work effectively. But I'm optimistic that it is a genuinely new and potentially pretty valuable approach to doing something to reduce the impact of an invasive species in the common event that you really can't get rid of the invader.
I think one of the things that I found really interesting about this paper was just the idea of behavioral modification to aid in conservation of endangered species. Do you know of any other examples where people have tried to modify the behavior of a species in a similar way for conservation?
I don't know of anything that's directly relevant to this case. I know that people have talked about trying to educate wallabies, for example, before they're released back into the field, to teach them that foxes are bad news by giving them a fright when they show them a stuffed fox and things like this. I think there's probably a huge field here that we will see growing. It's clear that behavior is critical. It's clear from our work on the other predators in the cane toad system that it is behavioral modifications that have enabled most predator species to survive the onslaught of the cane toads. And so I think behavior will be utterly critical in trying to manipulate the outcomes of these sorts of encounters.
Well, Rick, I wanted to thank you for talking with us today about your great new paper that just came out in Journal of Applied Ecology. And I hope that from what you guys have done, other groups and conservation in general can be better armed to deal with threats for endangered species. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
This is Mark Haddad of the Journal of Applied Ecology, where we put applied ecology into practice. Until next time, so long.